It's open air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, streaming online at ijpr.org. I'm Eric Thiel. We've got another great live session for you today. My guests in the JPR studios, Elliot Brood, Mark Sasso, Casey Laferrette, and Stephen Pitkin. Guys, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
The band actually formed, what, about 10 years ago? Is that true?
Yeah, we're coming up on our 10th anniversary, which is crazy. It's amazing.
And Casey, you and Mark were high school
We went to students? The same high school. We weren't friends in high school, but there's also an age difference.
There's a girl involved in a whole
Yeah, there's all that whole classic story of why we wouldn't have got along, but we're friends now.
So. You know, I was reading up on the band, and it, you know, all signs these days sort of point to the band being from Toronto, but the two of you are actually from a place called Windsor, Ontario. Right. And the geography starts to get a little weird, because as I was looking around thinking, well, Windsor's got to be a suburb of Toronto, it's like Detroit.
Yeah,
right.
It's
literally across the river from Detroit.
Yeah.
So when you grew up, was the musical influence heavily Detroit?
Oh, for sure.
There's great radio there. And it's funny because Windsor is actually south of Detroit. It's a funny little thing. It hooks underneath the U.S. So we're actually south of the United States there. But I mean, yeah, Motown was huge. Not that that's really probably reflected in the music we make, but I think we were at least influenced by really good music a lot.
So, yeah.
You know, yeah.
From all different styles. What kinds of things were you listening to as you were growing up besides Motown?
I mean, there's a great radio station that's actually based in Canada called 89X. And it was, I don't know, they were just playing the music at the time for me. But also, like, I don't know, I grew up on the 50s and 60s music myself. So
I was a grunge kid. Uh-huh. As soon as I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit, I stopped listening to rap music and started wanting to play guitar. So yeah, that was what, that whole Seattle scene, which, I mean, we've come from Seattle a couple of days ago, and it's kind of still a magical city for me to be in. Where all those bands were from and everything, so.
For sure. Now, the band started, what is a quartet, and then a couple of guys left, and then it was a duo for a while, and then...
Really, it was a duo. Like, I mean, yeah, the guys kind of played one show with us, and they kind of fell out really quickly, and... But Casey and myself, we kind of had a moment, we were in the subway, and Casey's like, he's like, we just kind of felt as though there was something there. And,
yeah,
and
the other two guys, like, weren't too serious about this. About
they didn't really kind of see it going anywhere, and Casey kind of just turned to me. He's like, well, wherever you're going to move, I'll go with you and we'll play music. And it was just like one of those moments where it's like, okay, you kind of need that, where two heads are kind of coming together and you kind of have that, I don't know, that moment of zen where you're like, okay, there's something here, so let's kind of take advantage.
Yeah, it's kind of funny now, 10 years later, to look back at that and be like, it actually happened. I didn't think anything of it, but, you know, I just wanted to play.
Are they calling you now to ask? You know, there might be a spot.
They're still
in the band.
Friends of ours, actually, and the one guy, Nick, who played bass with us, he's still one of my best friends. And you know, I think there's a little bit of, you know, not regret necessarily, because he's had to do his own thing. But I think he's, you know, he looks at it like, wow, it actually worked out, and you know, he's very proud of us. But I think there's got to be a little bit that wishes, you know, he wishes he was still playing or whatever. But
the funny thing is, Nick is the guy that kind of kept bringing us together, because we didn't really get along at first. I don't think we really had that mutual admiration at the beginning, so it was like he'd kind of keep bringing us together to play music, and then kind of we were like, I don't know, something happened. So
Elliot Brood, my guest in the JPR studios for a live session today. The new album is called Days Into Years. Can we hear a tune?
Yeah, we're gonna do a song. I think, I don't know what number it is, 3 maybe. It's called If I Get Old. It's about what it might be like to be a soldier in the trenches in World War I. Goes like this.
Get stretched along the road, buried under all they've come to know. Living fast, this wilderness won't last. These days just blow away into the past. If I get company. such good company.
It's Elliot Brood live on Jefferson Public Radio, streaming online at ijpr.org. That one's called If I Get Old from the new album Days Into Years. So, guys, there is no one in the band named Elliot Brood. So what is the story with the name of this band?
Well, do you want the truth? Or do you want, sometimes we make up the story because the real story isn't as that exciting.
Well, the made up stories are entertaining. Yeah. But what's the real story behind the name? Where did it come from?
The real story is, I guess I'm a big baseball fan, so there's a movie called The Natural with Robert Redford.
Sure.
And so in the movie, there's a femme fatale character that I just kind of like the name, how her name kind of went. And so she tried to kill Robert Redford in the movie anyways. He gets introduced to her. He's like, what's your name? She's like, Harriet Brood. And I was just like, oh, it just flowed kind of nicely. And it was like, at that time, before we had actually even formed as a band, I was kind of playing solo, and I thought I'd play under an assumed name. And so I thought, instead of Harriet, Elliot Brood.
Gotcha.
And then it kind of just took on a life of its own once we kind of, now we're a three-headed beast.
Turns out monster. Her name was actually Bird, not Brood.
Yes.
So, you know, but we've told people that he's like a killer from the
1800s. Right. It's sort of now become this fictitious character that you write songs on behalf of.
Yeah, exactly. Of, right? You know, these are actually great questions, by the way. Thanks for doing the research. Not everyone does that. But I think my vision of him is always that kind of like dark, dirty, bearded guy in the corner of a bar that no one's really paying attention to, but he watches everyone and kind of can take the whole thing in. So yeah, that's kind of our thing, is like we're using, you know, his songs and we're doing it.
You mentioned just a moment ago that you have become a three-headed beast, and during the song there was some percussion going on, some sort of found percussion by way of Stephen Pitkin, who joined the group after the move to Toronto, I guess. How did the trio form? How did you end up in the band?
It's pretty funny. I was a drummer for a long time, but I sort of moonlighting as an audio engineer live, and I discovered these guys in a small club in Toronto called The Cameron House, and really got into their music. And at the time, I was looking to record musical groups, and they were perfect because two guys, like acoustic instruments, can't really go wrong with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I somehow talked them into letting me record their first EP, as it were. And then subsequently, I guess, they asked if I would play some percussion with them.
We had this like kind of weird courting ritual where we were kind of intimidated to ask him if he would play drums with us because we were pretty green, like just, you know, starting out. And Steve was an experienced drummer. So it was this kind of, I don't know how long it took. We asked him to play our CD release party. And it was about a 6-month period of kind of like, maybe we'll ask him. And at the same time, Steve kind of wanted to play with us. And it ended up working. And I think those kind of little small things, I think it's all because it was supposed to happen that way. But, you know.
And for our live session, you are, I guess you're playing the carpet by stomping and your pocket full of change. And
got a little change in the pocket going jinglingly.
You know, so at least for us here at JPR, our exposure to your music has been through this new album, by all descriptions is a little different than what you had been doing prior. And I've been reading reviews that say, well, this new album is the mellower side of Elliot Brood, but yet you have sort of amplified on the new album. So you've sort of turned the volume up, but mellowed
somehow?
Well,
I think, yeah, I mean, compared to a lot of our previous stuff, it's kind of more of a stomp-like. That kind of, I don't know what you call that, but that kind of beat,
like
anyways.
Barn raising.
Yeah,
music,
I think,
right?
So. Like that kind of like get the. There's not as many songs like that on this one, I think. And it has to do a lot with the subject matter, the way that we wanted the songs to sound. And, you know, we didn't play an electric guitar before this record, really. So that was a big influence on this album, too. But it's not that far off from our older stuff, I don't think. But I do think it's a step away kind of from that consistent. You know, we get a lot. Those songs are a lot of fun, too. But we like to have a variety of things. So,
you know, we get a lot of artists through here that have music that are described in unusual ways. And I don't think that I have ever had a band come through with music described as death country.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Who coined that term?
Funny enough, by accident, I kind of did, just because we had, you know, we play with the banjo a lot. And so everybody kept seeing us and calling us bluegrass. And we got booked into like this kind of semi quasi bluegrass festival. And it's like, we didn't fit because we're electrified and we have drums and all this stuff. And so, I don't know, we were writing songs that are kind of darker, and people would be like, oh, you're country music as well. And we're like, no, we're not country. So we kind of dug a hole for ourselves by calling it death country, because then people thought we were playing thrash metal country music, which isn't the case.
Yeah, actually, at the Cameron House that Steve was just talking about, there was a bunch of people that come to the showcase thinking it was some kind of speed metal country thing. And I mean, to a degree, it sort of is, and especially in the beginning, I'd spent a lot of time just playing acoustic guitar really, really fast, because that's all I couldn't play it well, so I would just play it really hard and fast, and that was like what I did. So I guess to a degree, it kind of was that way, but
It was more the lyrical content. Yeah. It was just like darker, but not.
But we've been also called like what Urban Hillbilly Saloon, and the new one that I love that someone said was Frontier Rock. I think that's an awesome. I love that one. That one sounds really strong. I like that.
You know, a big part of your fan base is due to live performing, and watching videos of especially live festivals that are on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the influence or likenesses I see are bands like Avett Brothers or even Mumford and Sons, where the fans are pretty rabid. They know your lyrics. They're participating in the songs themselves, and I remember reading an interview that you guys gave a number of years ago where you said that you didn't want to record anything that you couldn't play live.
Yeah.
Is that still your philosophy making music?
I mean, I think now we do flesh out the songs a little more because we've learned to play other instruments, but we definitely don't want to have something on a recorded album that we can't pull off in a live context. That's always the root. I don't think we record songs until we play them live anyways, really. Like we usually road test things out while we're on tour before it becomes something that's on an album. So it is important to us. Because there's only three of us that we can. I mean, we do multiple things.
Yeah, we've added instruments as well. Like Casey plays bass with his feet. I have a keyboard on my left side that I play sometimes in addition to the drums.
We kind of like the essence of the song to be there, as opposed to, you know what I mean, like kind of not really representing ourselves. So that's kind of, we record live off the floor and then kind of add things afterwards. But, you know, the essence of the song is there for sure.
Oh. Elliot Brood's my guest live in the JPR studios. The new album is called Days Into Years. We'll talk about that new album in a minute. Can we hear another tune, guys?
Yeah, sure. Maybe we'll do. We were just talking about the Cameron House, and when Steve joined, and Edge of Town is one of the records, one of the songs from the first record that we recorded with Steve. So maybe we'll do that one.
And then we'll come back and play another.
Yeah, so this one's from an old record. It's called Tintype that we put out, I guess,
almost 10 years ago,
which is funny to say that out loud. But.
It's Elliot Brood live on Jefferson Public Radio, streaming at ijpr.org. The new album is called Days Into Years. This new album, Days Into Years, is largely based on ideas that you guys came across after touring cemeteries in, what, France and Belgium, World War One cemeteries, right? And seeing tombstones of Canadian soldiers. Is that true?
Yeah, the first one that we kind of stopped in is called the Etaples Cemetery. It's pretty massive. It's like 11,500 soldiers there. And we just kind of happened upon it because we were taking the back roads trying to save some money because the French toll roads are pretty brutal. And we just kind of like, we pulled over and then we spent at least maybe 45 minutes or an hour walking around there, and it kind of changed our whole trip. And we decided that, you know, more than likely probably wouldn't travel there or go to see these places with your family. So we ended up going to Juno Beach where this, you know, in Normandy and all of that stuff, and hit a whole bunch of other places as well. And, yeah. And we hit it in the morning, actually. We tried to time it to kind of maybe experience what maybe they kind of experienced light-wise. It was right around the time anyways. It was the end of May.
The invasion beaches. Juno Beach is the big Canadian beach during that invasion. That's the big beach for our country, you know, a source of pride and everything. So we got to go there and really see where it happened. And it's a really kind of, I wouldn't say creepy, it's just a very surreal experience to be there and know that what happened there, you know, right there. So I think that all that whole experience affected us, and we had stories that, you know, popped in. And we actually put out a record before this, in between. Our last record came out after that trip, but kind of all these ideas were stored and, you know, we use them for this album.
And going back a couple of years, Mountain Meadows was also a thematic album that dealt with a massacre in the Utah Territory in the 1850s. You guys must read a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And documentaries as well. So, yeah.
And it's actually a kind of a common interest for the band?
Well, the one thing is, like, I don't know, like, mining your own personal life can kind of get pretty boring pretty quickly. And I think the one thing that we kind of like to do is, you know, you can kind of play with history. You don't necessarily have to be exact about it. We throw characters in there that might not have ever been there, and that kind of makes it interesting for us that way. And
I think we also try to make the theme a little bit loose. It's not by any means, especially this one, this is a war that, or pardon me, a record that has a lot to do with war, but it's not a political thing. There's no opinion about war other than what we think it must have been like just to be an individual kid there, kind of thing. And those stories, and actually with Mountain Meadows, we're actually going there on the way back through to Denver, so we're going to see the place where it happened, which is, I'm not sure if it's a really popular event in American history, but I know that it was like the largest massacre on American soil until 9/11 happened or whatever. But it's a pretty crazy story. It's like the thing of Hollywood movies, you know, what happened. So
You guys have said that you feel like you sound like a Canadian band. Why? Like, how? What is it?
What are you talking about?
Is it about your sound that would make you say that you sound like a Canadian band?
You know what? Well, a huge influence on us is Neil Young, and he's Canadian. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like, it's not that we're a Canadian. We sound Canadian. I think it's more that, you know, you're influenced by your environment. And I don't know. Growing up, on the border of Detroit, you're influenced by their music as well.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I think, I don't know. Campfires, like living in cottage country or going to cottage country, that kind of affects you pretty
much.
And
I think as well, like, I mean, I've met other people from different border towns, and it's probably the same on both sides, but for Canadians, I think that reinforces your national pride a little bit to be a border town, and that, like, friendly competition. It's like being Dutch and having Germany right there, you know, there's this, like, kind of friendly thing there. So I don't know, I think, I mean, we do say a lot of the subject matter does have to do with Canadian landscape and, you know, visually what it looks like to us and that stuff. We have a song called "O Alberta," which pretty much names provinces, so it doesn't get more Canadian than that.
But the funny thing is, like, even when if we're in France or we're here in the States, our music translates, even though it might not translate.
Yeah, it's,
like,
pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it kind of represents, you know, more energy and kind of people's ideas as opposed to a geographical region. Yeah, we're Canadian. We play kind of.
We have the cooperating ukulele song.
We do have that.
A response to the Dueling Banjo.
Well, yeah, like, we on tour, we have a song. It's called The Valley Town. It's off Mountain Meadows, and it's Mark and myself both playing ukuleles. It's this. Yeah, I mean, we always joke about it that in the States you have the Dueling Banjos, and it's that competition thing, and in Canada, this totally Canadian thing we came up with. There's cooperating ukuleles. It's the same thing, and it's just, you know, so it's a funny thing to say.
You guys have been out on tour crossing Canada many times over the last 10 years. Tours of the United States. How many times have you come down the West Coast?
Maybe five.
Three?
Yeah.
Oh, am I over? Five. I don't know. I can't.
Well, we haven't done extreme long national tours here like we do in Canada, but we have hit these places kind of. The Pacific Northwest is actually between, like, Portland and Seattle and everything. We've been there a few times now, and it's really getting good for us up there. Been to LA a couple of times, but LA's a weird situation.
Yeah, we do well in San Francisco, and then actually Colorado. There's all these pockets kind of like in Mountain people tend to like our music for some reason.
Snowboarders. This is a crazy phenomenon for us. Our music is in tons of snowboard films and like extreme sports people are all over. Yeah. It's like, well, you should be sponsored by like Red Bull or something. Nice. It's weird.
You guys have mentioned that a lot of the songs, or at least parts of songs, come from the images and the sounds that you hear in specific places that you stop while you're out on tour. Can you name any specific that have come to you in places here in the U.S.?
Oregon in general is, you guys are really lucky out here. It's an incredibly beautiful part of the world. And I was joking before that maybe we could trade some of our provinces for for Washington and Oregon, and we could switch the border a little bit. But I don't know. I think I don't know what the sound of this part of the world is, but it's kind of a calming thing. And I don't know if it comes across in music or anything like that. But I think that quote was more to do with, we find rooms that we like to get the sound out of, like a wooden room, like a shack sound and stuff like that. And the sound of what a wooden floor sounds like, an authentic creaking floor and things like that.
We use sounds too, right? From like we use the train, the Canadian National Train in one song. We've used the trucks and the highway, just like putting up mics for ambient, and we haven't done that in the U.S. yet.
Sort of with the idea of putting the listener where you were at the moment that you created it?
Yeah. Well, just trying to create that ambiance or that scene.
And I've always been a fan of kind of those headphone nuggets in music, like that you wouldn't hear. If it was playing in the room, you wouldn't really notice it, but then when you're falling asleep with something, that happens on our records a lot. Like there's like these kind of hidden things that are back in the mix a little bit, and when you listen to it while you're sleeping or something, it comes out.
But we do really enjoy the rooms.
Yeah,
as opposed to just recording in a studio where they take everything away and then they're like, okay, we'll add reverb afterwards. Mm. Like we'd prefer to play in a room that is actually, you use it as an instrument, really.
Yeah. Elliot Brood, my guests live on Jefferson Public Radio. The new album is called Days into Years. We have time for one more today?
We do.
Cool. What are you going to play for us?
We're going to play a song called Lindsay.
Awesome.
Yeah. Goes like this. Can I sleep for a while?
Oh.
It's Elliott Brood live on Jefferson Public Radio. Music from the new album called Days Into Years. Mark Sasso, Casey Lafferette, Stephen Pitkin. Guys, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us,
Eric. Thanks for having us.
Open Air continues right after this.